G'day, Footyology listeners. Roko here. Enjoy our podcast? Well, you can become an official Footyology podcast supporter simply by using the supporter feature through Acast. There's no subscription or regular commitment, just the sheer satisfaction that comes with knowing you've kept the debt collectors from our door. No, just kidding. It does help, though. If you want to get started, you just need to follow the support this show link in the show description. Thanks again, and now let's get on with it.
Welcome to the Footyology Podcast with Rowan Connolly and Mark Fine.
G'day everyone, welcome to the Footyology Podcast. This is our grand final review. And first, allow us to say a hearty congratulations to the Richmond Football Club Premiers in 2020, a third flag in 4 years after a gripping grand final. I don't think it'll go down as one of the greats, but certainly an engrossing game. It was certainly no dud, and certainly not the stroll to victory the Tigers saw in their previous two flags in what is undoubtedly already one of the great football eras. A great way to cap off a season that we never thought would happen at one stage. So let's not forget that we did really well to get, relatively speaking, a comparatively normal in the circumstances AFL season. We're here to wrap it all up, as I say. A very good afternoon to my Footyology co-host, Mark Fine. How are you, Finey?
I'm well. Echo your sentiments of congratulations to the Tigers. And also, something that we have discussed and people have mentioned, is this a season with an asterisk? Well, the only asterisk was how difficult it was for any team to win the flags, especially a Victorian team. Because Victoria had been or become the pariah state, so there was no way of any of the Victorian footballers getting back home once they left the hub life. This was a victory for the ages, not made easy by Geelong, who, of course, like any good football team, really took the game up to Richmond, and we'll discuss the reasons why they couldn't see it through. It certainly started sensationally enough, didn't it, Rowan? We'll never forget that beginning where in two separate incidents, almost simultaneously, two players were lying prone on the turf. So, yeah, there were memorable moments.
And we'll be going through them in full, vivid detail in our game review very shortly. Well, it wasn't a season with an asterisk, fortunately, Finey. I'll tell you what else. We'll never, ever have an asterisk next to it. And that is the greatest hamburger in the universe.
No. And you know why it doesn't have an asterisk? Because it's the standard bearer. All the other hamburgers should have notes next to them. This is a great Australian hamburger. Andrew's Hamburgers, 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park. What makes a great Aussie burger? No crazy frills. Plenty of your favourites can be added to the standard. But isn't the standard beautiful? Eye for detail with the meat, those patties, succulent, fresh vegetables, delectable, fluffy buns. I'm trying to do a Rowan here. I hope I'm doing it justice. That's a bloody good burger at 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park. None better. 81 years they've been going now, and we're so proud to have our name associated with them.
Asterisk free, as are the greatest home renovations in the universe. Finey, tell us about them.
Yes, I have not travelled beyond this planet's gravitational pull. I've been overseas. I've never seen this eye for detail. And maybe in some far-flung galaxy, there is a Nick Spartel's equivalent. Alpha Centauri properties, who knows? But I can speak with authority that here in Melbourne's inner southeastern suburbs, West Point Properties with Nick Spartels provides the detail, the personal touches that are unparalleled.
And we have spread the word so effectively about West Point Properties that I believe recently a group of tribesmen in the Kalahari Desert got in touch with Nick Spartels, and they too are after the heated floors that are such a signature of their magnificent work. So there's a few tribes over in the depths, the hot climes of Africa, who will soon, also be feeling the warmth of heated desert floor beneath their tootsies. What a wonderful gift to the world.
Yes, the tootsies as well and the hooters come together on this particular topic.
All right, that's one of our best plugs yet, I think. Wonderful sponsors, both. We thank them for their support. We've got a lot to talk about with this grand final. Let's do it now.
On Footyology, Newsfeed.
Well, heaps of news out of the grand final. There always is. But I think the most important thing we need to talk about, Finey, is Richmond with three flags now in 4 years. Where do they stand in the pantheon of greatness? And if you're talking modern-day greatness, we're now talking about four separate clubs, four separate eras, aren't we? And those clubs are, in chronological order, Brisbane, Geelong, Hawthorn, and now the Tigers. It's a very interesting debate. Just before I wheel into a few figures about it, how do you see it off the top of your head?
Well, we are talking about triple premiership eras. The note here is that Richmond are not done. So on one hand, we've got Richmond that are still possibly in, haven't completed their premiership run. But I do have to defer to the fact that if we're talking about three premierships, the Brisbane and Hawthorn won theirs in a row, consecutive premierships. And look, we know how hard it is to go to back-to-back, ask Geelong. So just on the mathematics, I do have to set Brisbane and Hawthorn aside for completing the triple in consecutive years, though Richmond haven't completed their run necessarily. Then we can obviously try and dissect which teams do that sort of fantasy football type of things. If those sides played against each other, who would win? I'm happy to enter that discussion. But at the moment, if Richmond were not to add to their three, Brisbane and Hawthorn stand apart because of their ability to go three in a row.
All right, well, consider some stats. I've done a bit of number crunching. So you've got the Brisbane era first, three premierships in a row, four grand final appearances in a row from 2001 to 2004. Their winning percentage across the full season, across those 4 years, is 74.7%. So that is actually the lowest of the four clubs involved. However, I give them extra points for, as you say, winning three in a row, but also winning their three as an interstate team playing away from home against three home-based opponents. Funnily enough, the fourth grand final, when they were on neutral territory in that regard, they lost. But they, for me, are number one just from the Mighty Hawks. Now, their era, three premierships in a row, 2013 to 15, four grand finals in a row, 12 to 15. And again, somewhat ironically, some would say the one they probably blew and the one they were most likely to win was the one they lost, 2012, but only by a sliver, of course, in what I consider to be the greatest grand final I have seen. But three in a row, four grand finals, two absolute obliterations of opponents in those winning grand finals, and a winning percentage for them of 79.2%. Now, Richmond and Geelong is probably the playoff for third, isn't it? I give Brisbane one, Hawthorn two. Then it comes down to Richmond and the Cats. So the Cats, an era spanning 5 years, 2007 to 2011, four grand finals, again, of course, again. It's funny how often this happens. The one they lost was the one they were probably most favoured to win. Of course, they only lost two games of the year in 2008, and the grand final was one of them. The other year, they appeared in a preliminary final. So across a five-year period, now they have far and away the best winning percentage, 84%. Phenomenal run of over 5 years for the Cats. And then the Tigers. This era now spanning four seasons, 17 to 20, three premierships delivered the other year. And again, some would argue they played their best football in this year, the year they pulled up short in the preliminary final. Their winning percentage Fractionally higher than Brisbane's, below the others, 75.3%. So in the end, finally, I think you've got to still have Richmond number four, Geelong four grand finals, three premierships, not in a four-year period, but for sustained excellence, a winning percentage of 84%, pretty hard to beat that. However, as you say, this era is not over. And if Richmond are able to come even close again next year, I think, certainly if they make another grand final, obviously, let alone if they win a flag, we revise this discussion again. But it's a fascinating debate, isn't it? And four clubs and four eras, which are pretty close to each other, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a really good debate and discussion. Any Richmond supporter will rightly say our era isn't over. Do you actually look at the four teams, take away the percentages, take away the premierships, and see one team ability-wise standing out? I mean, if I was pressed on that fact, I would go with Brisbane. Their sort of a galaxy of midfield stars, the fact that they had a pretty strong all-round team, yeah, I would slightly lean to Brisbane as being the best 22 of that triple premiership run. I think might be the best 22 of the four teams. What do you think?
I agree. If you're asking me, strip away the stats, the premierships, just look at them in terms of ability. I would go one Brisbane, two Geelong, three Hawthorn, four Richmond. Adding back the stats and looking at the complete picture, I go one Brisbane, two Hawthorn, three Geelong, four Richmond.
You know what? I am, as I say in Latin, ad idem. I am at one with you. I can't fault your logic. I stand shoulder to shoulder with you. I think that Geelong also had that powerhouse midfield. Of course, boasting really Ablett at his best, the young Selwood, Chapman, who was a star player. Interestingly, now here's an interesting one. None of those four teams boast a standout ruckman. So no real advantage to be had there. And I hold ruckman in great store, so there's a common thread.
Although, having said that, Brisbane had a bloke who pretty much only played in the finals and was Clark Keating, a massive influence in a couple of those grand final wins.
It's hard because with Richmond, are you allowed to include Alex Rance in that best 22, for example? He only played in one of the premierships. So, yeah, I agree. I agree with your rankings. Though it's, even though the same era, slightly different periods of that era, and maybe that speaks to the greatness of Richmond as a team, that they might not have the out-and-out stars as Brisbane boasted, yet they hold the same dominance over the competition. And we do live in an era where team comes first because it's not so much positional play anymore. So does that make Richmond the greatest team because they don't have as wide a range of straight-out stars?
Well, that's a very good point. That's a whole nother debate almost, and maybe we can talk about that another time. And certainly in terms of team ethos, I would have the Tigers playing second fiddle to no one. They have been magnificent, their complete team ethic. All right, that is a great discussion. Let's move on to another talking point that has emerged out of this grand final, and it's another pretty obvious one. Dustin Martin, the first man to win three Norm Smith medals. He has a Brownlow medal. He has three premiership medallions. It's come with a rush, and it's often hard to place contemporary players in a historical context. I don't know about you, but I tend to usually bow to history. And it seems to have happened so quickly that it's hard to sort of get your head around it. But on statistics and on honours alone, you now have to look at Dustin Martin as one of the, not just modern era greats, one of the all-time greats of the game.
I agree. What makes a modern player a superstar? Let's put the awards aside because, you know, Norm Smith medals are an absolute mark of brilliance in the most important game of the year. but some players just don't have the opportunity to play in grand finals. I just want to talk about Dustin Martin, the footballer. And this is why I think he deserves to be part of the discussion of the greatest of all time. He is a standalone as a midfielder in terms of clearance play, in terms of that all-important exploding from the contest. He, to me, is the equivalent of the other great in the modern era, that Chris Judd. He can get the ball and he gets away. He gets away in a different way. We know that the don't argue is part of his armoury, but it is a brilliant part of his armoury. Very hard to tackle. So he's great at getting it, great at escaping with it, and that is very important. Then it is football, and I'm stealing your thunder a bit here. I'll let you maybe take up the discussion. How good is he at kicking? Now, we're talking as the midfielder here, not shots at goal. How do you rate his kicking, Rowan?
Well, to me, and I got smashed for saying this a while back, but to me, he is the best kick in the game. And people can throw efficiency ratings at me or whatever, but I don't think other players in the game do as much damage with their kicking as he does, whether that's at goal or whether that is creating scoring opportunities for other players. I think he sees opportunities that other players don't. He kicks the ball at great velocity, which I think is crucial to him being an effective kick. But, I mean, take the goal, for instance, he set up that Cam McIntosh kicked last night. You know, he spots Liam Baker across the ground, takes a risky kick, and this is why his effectiveness can sometimes be a lower percentage than others. He takes options that others wouldn't dare to take when they would be playing safe. I think in the modern game particularly, there's a lot of cheap possessions. So the incisive possessions do a higher degree of damage than perhaps the same possessions did 30 years ago, because the context is different. In a game riddled with safe, nothing sort of possession football, his possessions always have a big impact on how the play then unfolds. So that's my argument on that one. The other thing is, and no one can dispute this, in terms of finals and big occasion, now he's now played 12 finals. I saw one measure last night after the game. I think, and this could be a conservative estimate, of those seven finals, I think he's been best on ground in no fewer than seven of them, and among the best three or four in 11 of the 12. And the only one in which he didn't feature was, of course, the infamous preliminary final loss to Collingwood in 2018. I mean, that speaks volumes. Ultimately, you can talk about numbers and you can talk about records and longevity and everything, but surely the most telling factor in assessing greatness is the ability to deliver at the most important moments. And I can't think of another player in the history of the game who has done it from as high percentage of those big moments as he has. It's just an incredible, incredible record of standing up on the big occasion. There may be equal to that. That's not coming to me off the top of my head, but I can't think of anyone who did it more frequently than he has.
No, it's a great point. And also the role he plays in getting his team into those all-important games can't be undersold. So what really takes me, and for me, takes him to a level that so few can equal, is take him out of the midfield. And is he not the most dangerous small to mid-size, we'll call him a mid-size forward, in the competition? We know that Dangerfield has gone forward, that there is justifiably a little bit of a pot on Dangerfield's finishing in front of goal. Gary Ablett, we've seen go forward at the very end of his career, so a little bit unfair to compare him, but at no point, even though he was always dangerous around goals, was he as dangerous as Dustin Martin. I subscribe to the fact that if Dustin Martin played permanent forward, he would win the Norm Smith medal this season, and maybe even in a regular season, be in the top three choices for the Norm Smith medal. Now, what midfielder in history can say that other than Lee Matthews? So he's now in the class of... So I'm now starting to pare it down because Lee Matthews was a brilliant midfielder and a brilliant forward. And he is certainly one of my all-time greats. May I say, and I don't see many lists that have this person, in my top 10 of all time, featuring in the top five, has always been Simon Madden.
Mm.
A standalone star ruckman, and I mean brilliant ruckman, and another who at centre-half forward was one of the great forwards of his era. So I start to get down to my top five as it stands without Martin. Matthews is in it, Madden is in it, and so is the great Malcolm Blight, who I saw play a number of positions, kicked 100 goals in a season. I thought Malcolm Blight was a brilliant fullback. He was a brilliant on-baller, playing inside or outside. So of players that I have seen, there are the four greatest that I have seen. I don't include Gary Ablett Sr. because it is a team game and I'm not as comfortable with Gary Ablett Sr. as a team player and certainly never, I think, put in enough effort off the field to be a standalone midfielder. Maybe on ability the best I've seen, but didn't quite, I think, capture the best, very best he could have been, maybe because of how he approach the game. So there are my four greatest, and I would have to think long and hard before placing them in any order.
Yeah, it's a pretty elite company. Look, I haven't thought that one through. I'd certainly have the name Carey up there, and on the big stage, he was pretty amazingly consistent delivering on the biggest of stages as well. But, you know, we are just the names we're reeling out here. It's obvious that this guy, he may be contemporary and, I mean, history may judge him even more kindly than we are right now. But I think even at the moment, while his career is still to play out, this guy is one of the all-time greats. What a magnificent footballer, and we're lucky to be watching him at his peak. All right, there's another thing we've got to talk about, and it is the concept of the night grand final. We've now had one. Albeit in very different circumstances, perhaps not fair to judge the concept given the unusual circumstances, the fact that it was played in another state. How did it go? Well, I thought the game was pretty good. I don't think the time had an adverse impact on the game. Where I think it did really let us down, and I'm sure we felt this far more in Melbourne than elsewhere, but was the change to the rituals of grand final day as we know it. And that waiting around all day was bloody shocking. I reckon on social media, if that was any guide, people were ready to kill by the time the whole thing actually started. So I wasn't a fan of the concept. I'm still not a fan of the concept. However, Finey, you can't ignore the all-important TV ratings. And the news today is that it was a quote, how's this for a well-worn phrase? Ratings bonanza for the league. An average national audience of 3.81 million viewers, which was 33% up on last year's grand final. And in Melbourne, it was 60% up on 2019, an average 1.6 million viewers. So the broadcast networks certainly have plenty of information to back up their arguments that it is a concept which should stay. I'm now of the view, I absolutely want to keep a day grand final, but I'm now of the view that the AFL will take what they see as the middle ground and decide on a twilight grand final from now on. And I know you're not a fan of that idea.
Yeah, I hate twilight football. I have been to games at the MCG. I find that very term, twilight, as not a good, visually, not a good time to play football, not a good time to drive, not a good time to do anything where you're looking up at the sky. It is, at times, a little bit hard to pick up the flight of the ball or various other things. So I just don't like the idea of playing the game both in fading daylight, which really twilight is, and then in darkness illuminated by lights. For me, it's either a day grand final or a night grand final. As far as the rituals, look, I know in Melbourne in particular, yes, it seemed an interminable wait waiting for the game. But let's not forget, our movement has been severely restricted. So we weren't able to create a new set of rituals of big gatherings at people's houses that may start a little bit later. So we may be swapping the grand final breakfast concept for a grand final lunch. It's hard to judge exactly how we would celebrate the day here in Melbourne, given the extraordinary circumstances of still being held down in lockdown four. So rituals don't disturb me that much. What does disturb me, basically, and my rant will expand on this, is the opportunity taken to change so many things about our great game in one season that we may never see again, and pay respect to tradition. Pay respect to everything that has gone before you. We play our grand finals on Saturday afternoon. Why not continue that? Surely it's the cornerstone of our game. It's what everybody strives towards. Everybody loves it. Everybody wants to be a part of it. I know as a St Kilda fan, I want to be there when St Kilda win their second premiership. And I don't want it to be at 10:30 at night. I want it to be like every other premiership bar, this one that has preceded it. A great experience on Saturday afternoon with the cup being lifted in the fading light of a magnificent Saturday. And no one person or no one administration has the right to change that.
Yeah, here. And it, as you said, I mean, it's a time frame at a 2:30 start, which creates its own special atmosphere. I sort of get annoyed by this automatic assumption that everything looks better at night. I mean, there is something quite beautiful about the, you know, the Premiership Cup being presented in the fading light, sunlight of a nice spring afternoon in Melbourne. It's got a mystique all of its own, I think, which has probably not been pushed hard enough in the traditionalist cause. But unfortunately, I think we are fighting a losing cause on that one. And I guess they'll just wait for people like us to either give up or die. And in my case, that could be quite soon.
You know, that Saturday on which the grand final is traditionally played, it's the last day before daylight savings. So that night is the night that daylight savings is enacted here in Melbourne. And it, for me, is the last day of the winter sporting season. And to me, that's exactly the perfect way to end it, in the sort of dappled sunlight, if we're fortunate enough to have sun on the day, which we often do, of that late, it's not winter, but at that early spring afternoon. And that night we bring in our summer season. Football's over. The clocks go back an hour and or forward an hour, whatever it is. And we enjoy to look forward to cricket. It's, to me, entering into night enters into another realm. And it's not the way we play football. Not on grand final day.
Well, they'll paint us as a couple of dinosaurs, but I don't care. If we're dinosaurs, we're going down big, angry and snarling. All right, final one to finish off. Norm Smith medal voting, of course, always hugely interesting to the football public. And Dustin Martin, absolutely no doubts about the winner in this case. He received the maximum three votes from all five judges, who were Lee Matthews, Lauren Arnell, Malcolm Blight, Damien Barrett and Peter Ryan. However, it has emerged something of a glitch. And this was actually played out, I'm told, live on TV as the chairman of the Norm Smith voting panel, Lee Matthews, was asked about his votes. And someone pointed out that he'd given two votes to Nathan Broad. And his response was, what? And it transpired that Lee had actually meant to give his two votes to Jaden Short, but had a bit of a senior moment and wrote down Broad on the voting slip. So the final voting, for what it's worth, Martin 15, Short 6, Edwards 4, Duncan 3 and Broad 2, should perhaps have read Martin 15, Short 8, Edwards 4 Duncan three. Interesting one if it had it cost someone a medal for him.
Yeah, bloody interesting. But I feel a little bit vindicated in this because, as you know, on our Footyology Final Siren program, I am entrusted with the best players. And my best players were Martin, short. I had Bolton in third, Edwards fourth. And I did not include Nathan Broad. Now, I think Nathan Broad did some important things in the game, but the fact that he initially appeared to receive votes and that I didn't include him in my best seven for Richmond had me a little bit sort of off kilter. So, yeah, I'm feel slightly vindicated in that I didn't include him, and now that I'm not running contrary to one of the game's greats, makes me feel more comfortable.
All right, well done, and commiserations to Lee for having one of those moments. And we have enough of them, Lee, so never mind, you're still a certified living legend. All right, that is the fallout from the grand final. The game itself, well, we haven't got round to that yet. I think it's time we did so.
On Footyology, wrap around.
So the start of a grand final, what drama would unfold? The early jousting, always seen as pretty crucial. Well, this one, more crucial than most finding, because as you alluded to before, a couple of incidents with massive ramifications for either side happening literally within about half a second of each other, the same passage of play. The first saw a contested ball met with equal velocity from either direction. Nick Vlosten for the Tigers, Patrick Dangerfield for the Cats. Dangerfield continued on with his clearing attempt and made pretty forceful contact with a forearm to Vlosten's head. He was out cold even before he hit the ground, carried off to take no further part in the game. That forced a major reshuffle of the Richmond backline. And then, as I said, literally a half second later, we saw Gary Ablett land heavily on his shoulder, came up grimacing in pain, taken to the bench. And you did think for a second, have we also seen the last of him? Dramatic stuff indeed, wasn't it?
Certainly was. And when we talked about Gary Ablett, the last of him, not just for the game, of course, but in football, and what a sad and sorry way that would have been for Gary Ablett to have ended his career. I guess the other thing about the start of the game was how long it took for either team to hit the scoreboard. So, yes, it wasn't 1989, it wasn't 1990 in terms of out-and-out brutality across the field, talking Hawthorn, Geelong and Collingwood Essendon there, but there was enough blood in the water, blood on the sand, as they say, to get your juices flowing.
Well, you're not wrong about scoreboard impact. So Geelong missed a couple of chances to get on the board first. Tom Hawkins had a crack and missed. Paddy Dangerfield also missed. We saw Gary Ablett come out on the ground, so that was a big relief for the Cats. But it was the Tigers who hit the scoreboard first, courtesy of Dion Prestia, a nice little right foot snap from about 25 metres out. And that was followed up less than a couple of minutes later with a second. Now, I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Dustin Martin, beautiful little centering kick from him over to Liam Baker. He fed out a handball. And McIntosh, who was under a fair bit of heat by the time he had the shot from just on the 50, let loose straight through. Richmond now with about 6.5 minutes left to play, 10 points up. They doubled Geelong for inside 50s to this point, 8-4. And already you're thinking, ooh, are the Cats in trouble?
That was really Richmond-like, how the game started with, we know in previous big games and previous finals, how much they love putting the, you know, really putting that sort of python-like strangulation on the opposition. But in this case, the fact that they were able to get the first two goals in relatively quick succession, well, Geelong had a bit of bleeding to stem. And the truth is, you just can't let a team like Richmond get 4 or 5 goals on the board in the first quarter. The response by Geelong was very impressive.
It was indeed. And it started with Cam Guthrie, who marked a pass from Brandon Parfitt, took the mark on 50. I thought he might struggle with the distance. And he didn't actually give the ball much of a whack, but it was timed beautifully, this shot from goal. Made it through comfortably, and that brought the Cats back to within 5 points. We then had the bizarre spectacle of not one, but two pitch invaders, we'll call them. They certainly weren't streakers, because thankfully in this case, they were fully clothed. Your standards have fallen since Helen D'Amico and 1982 finding streakers just aren't what they used to be. That interrupted a Richmond attack, funnily enough. So I don't know where that might have finished up had that not happened. But the Cats got a second on the board and hit the front with just 8 seconds of play left in that first quarter. It was a mark in the forward pocket to Mitch Duncan, and a beautifully curated, I think I'll use the word, curated shot, which absolutely split the centre. 8 seconds left on the clock. The Cats hit the front, go to the first break with a bit of momentum.
They certainly did. And just on the pitch invaders, there seems in the aftermath to have been a commercial reason for them to be on the ground. I don't want to be cynical, but, you know, if people are looking to promote their careers or further their reputation on the planet by disrupting a game of football, an AFL grand final, where have we got to, that people actually pay attention and think, you know, that some people think that that's a worthwhile practice? My goodness. Anyhow, back to the football. And I think Geelong had actually arrested the momentum a little bit. Now, this is something to go into quarter time with. The good news was Gary Ablett was back, not only from the dugout, but on the field and ready to play, you know, playing again. So let's just take things on face value. Geelong have not only stemmed the early attack from Richmond, they've hit the front. They're now a player up. Vlosten is, like all players, important in a grand final 22, but structurally vital for the Tigers. Advantage Geelong, one quarter of the game through.
Yes, well, it was the Cats who seemed to be leading the most statistical categories. They'd won the clearances. Rhys Stanley doubled Nankervis for hit-outs in that first term, and they're on top in both contested ball and uncontested ball. Mitch Duncan, 8 disposals in that first quarter. The other guy we should mention just quickly, Tom Stewart. I thought he was outstanding for Geelong in that first quarter, off half-back, both defending and creating plenty of attack. So, the first quarter break, Geelong 2-2, 14 points. Richmond 2-1, 13 points. Let's talk about the second quarter. Well, it became apparent pretty early on in the second term that Geelong was getting on a roll. The momentum continued for them just over 3 minutes into that second quarter. A free kick to Paddy Dangerfield, paid against Trent Cotchin for holding. Tidy Shangle, about 45 metres out, he made no mistake. Beautiful shot at goal. What'd you make of that free kick, Finney? Was it there?
Yes, it was there. I guess in terms of, if you were expecting this to be a grand final where everything was going to be let go, no, it wasn't. And that's why I thought the game was actually so well umpired, because free kicks that were there that might have been overlooked in the heat of desperate finals play were still played. No, free kick, beautifully taken by Dangerfield.
And they missed a couple of more opportunities here, the Cats, too. Grian Myers, there was an intercept mark he took. He played on, kicked a point, probably didn't need to play on. Zach Tuohy snapped a point. The Cats were so dominant in general play in this period of the game. In fact, at one stage, they'd had 12-2 inside 50 entries for the quarter without necessarily putting it on the scoreboard. Richmond made a few mistakes. At one stage, Marlon Pickett went for a handball. It just sort of dribbled off his hand. It was intercepted. And another key moment, which actually did result in Geelong putting that scoreboard pressure on, Noah Bolter, a clearing kick intercepted by Joel Selwood. He dished off to Grian Myers and he found Sam Menegola. Marked about 40 metres out, made no mistake. And 5.5 minutes into the quarter, Geelong all of a sudden were out to a 16-point lead. They Those inside 50s for the quarter were up to 16-6. Danger, danger for the Tigers. Not literally, because Paddy wasn't exerting too great an influence on this game, but it was almost panic station to Richmond. I felt fine. After another few minutes of play elapsed, we got to 18 and a half minutes in. Tom Hawkins, who hadn't really done much to this stage, marked about 45 metres out on a lead after a beautiful, deft little tap from Gary Ablett, or a handball, actually, but quick as a flash, off to Joel Selwood, and he found Hawkins on that lead. And Geelong now, 22 points up, having kicked 5-5, only 4 minutes left in the whole first half. So you looked at that and you thought, boy, Richmond have got some work to do to get back into this game.
I've got to say, Rowan, at this point, Geelong are as well positioned as they could possibly have imagined to win this premiership. Things are out of control for Richmond. They're not scoring in the second quarter. Ablett is back on the ground and played, as you say, a key role with that deft little handball to Selwood, onto Hawkins, and three of their mainstays, club champions, heroes from that past premiership era, team up. Beautiful kick at goal by Hawkins, which is important in the context of a Hawkins game. You love seeing him kick one like that. 22 points the difference. And yes, with hindsight, we might say, did Geelong take full advantage of the both possessional and momentum that they had in that first part of the second quarter? Well, that's up for debate. But let's just take ourselves back to that moment in time, and Richmond need to find something, and they need to find something before halftime, because momentum is a big thing, and the last thing they can afford is the next goal going to Geelong before they head into the huts.
And this is where you've got to give Richmond's resilience and their mindset enormous credit, because they had that opportunity. Shea Bolton had a chance to reduce that gap. He missed a very gettable shot at goal. So it was points only, the margin back to 21 points, still a power of work to be done. And then came what in retrospect will be seen as the turning point of this game. Richmond gets it forward again. Bit of a scramble for possession. Dustin Martin gets the ball, leaps out into a bit of space, still under enormous pressure as he snapped on his right foot over his shoulder. And watch that replay again. I don't know how he contorted himself enough to find the room inside the goals, but it snuck inside the left-hand goalpost. And with only a minute 15 left on the clock, a critical goal to Richmond Finney brought the deficit back to 15 points. Dusty actually got another free kick and measured up for another goal. This one went wide, but Richmond attacking as the siren went. Now, I'm interested in your response on this, because in retrospect, I look at it now and I wonder how both teams approached halftime. I think Geelong would have been satisfied with their statistical advantage and obviously their scoreboard advantage. But the more I thought about it later, the more I thought Richmond would have gone in, I think, with plenty of optimism still. Why? Because it wasn't just that goal that had got the margin back to very gettable. It was the fact that they actually had the last eight inside 50 entries of that second quarter. So whilst it wasn't reflected on the scoreboard, in terms of general play, they had definitely righted the ship and were very much back in the ball game.
You know, we don't know, Rowan, exactly what is said when the players get in that huddle and you see a lot of talking, a lot of sort of G'ing up. And the question is whether or not they're talking about themselves, or I think in the real world, there's a bit of, you know, we've got them here. We're back on top. And that's exactly how I feel Richmond went into that halftime break. They're the younger team. They're the team that were able to arrest the momentum and make it shift their way. And I agree entirely with you. Now, Geelong would have remained positive, but in the back of their minds would have been last year's preliminary final and the understanding that when this Richmond team comes at you, you better be made of the right stuff, because they are a pretty powerful force when they start their push, their run, their game-winning gambit. And Geelong would have had a lot to think about during that halftime break.
Leading possession winners at halftime for the Cats, Duncan had 16, Stewart 13, Selwood 12. For the Tigers, Jaden Short playing a great game off halfback, 14 disposals. Shane Edwards, busy as ever, 13. And that man, Dustin Martin, with 11. One key statistic in which Geelong were all over the Tigers was marks inside 50. They'd taken 7 of them. Richmond had taken only 1. So forward conversion and efficiency was an area Richmond had to address. Could they do it? Let's talk about the second half. So the second half begins, Geelong holding a 15-point advantage. Richmond needed early scoreboard action, and they got it. Barely a minute into the third quarter, they get the first centre-bounce clearance, the first inside 50. There's a marking duel between Jack Riewoldt and Lockie Henderson, and Riewoldt wins a free kick about 30 metres out for a hold, converts, and the margin is now back to 9 points. Was that free kick there, Finney?
I'm glad you asked me that. I refer back to that Dangerfield free kick. Yes, there's no question that there was no attempt by Henderson really to spoil the ball. What he was doing was denying that forward, Jack Riewoldt, clear passage to the ball in a manner that is not allowed in Australian rules football. It wasn't the clearest hold. It wasn't a grand final type free kick. But thank goodness it was paid, because if we set the standards earlier in the game with that Dangerfield free kick, this free kick was there. Fair play to Richmond. Well done to the umpires.
Yeah, agree. I thought it was pretty clear. And Richmond had a second on the board for the quarter in under 5 minutes. And significantly, it was now Geelong starting to make some errors. This goal came to Jason Castagna, but it followed a turnover from Jake Colajasny. Kane Lambert was the man who ended up on the end of that. Nice pass to Castagna, about 40 to 50 metres out. He wobbled one through. Funny little goal. I kept wondering why Geelong didn't have anyone big enough on the goal line. Could they have got a hand to it? Well, they didn't. The goal got through. Geelong now leading by only 3 points. What was going to happen next? Well, time for Geelong to show a bit of resistance. Arguably the play of the day for them, this. It was a end-to-end transition, sweeping off the half-back line, and it featured a handball from Hawkins to Myers to Ablett to Dowhouse, and finally back to Myers, who on the run, getting to about the 40-metre mark, bounced one through to a fair crescendo from the Geelong supporters at the Gabba. It was a beautiful goal. It seemed to restore a bit of momentum. That brought them back to within 9 points. So I've got to say, Fighty, at that stage, I'm thinking we have got an absolute epic on our hands. Back and forth, changes of momentum. What did you think at that point?
Great goal. Great response by the Cats. I'm really glad, by the way, that you mentioned that Castagna goal, because it's funny that sometimes in football, even at the highest level, the simplest things to do are overlooked. They had three players on, let's call it the right-hand goalpost, as was the goalpost Castagna was kicking towards. No one on the left-hand goalpost, and that definitely fell through armpit height for a ruckman. What a mistake. What a schoolboy error, as they say in England, to gift a goal to the Tigers under those circumstances. Anyhow, back to the Geelong response. Well, you're right. At that point, were we in for one of the great arm wrestles of all time? The fluidity of that Geelong goal and really the scoreboard had us licking our lips thinking, you know what? This could be a ding-dong battle. In other words, are we going to go goal for goal here? Is this one going to be decided, you know, by the timing of the siren, a nail's going to be bitten to the quick? Well, the problem for anybody that wanted that finish was twofold. A, Richmond are a very powerful finishing team, and B, Dustin Martin.
Absolutely. And I think also Richmond certainly addressed, as I said, the marking inside 50. They began to find targets more easily inside that 50. They also, at this point of the game, really took over around the stoppages. Now, that was an area the Cats had dominated during that second quarter run. But Richmond, by three-quarter time, had got the clearances back on level terms. Interestingly, too, the centre bounce clearances, they began to dominate. In fact, it was 9-5 at three-quarter time. And a couple of these decisive blows came straight from the middle. And Geelong errors. And the Richmond pressure had certainly ramped up. One of those errors produced the next goal. Interesting bit of play. Richmond go forward. Jason Castagna muffs. What a mark that he should have really taken, only about 15 metres out. Geelong appears to have cleared the lines, and it was Jed Buse who took the ball in the back pocket. Probably should have just gone long and along the boundary line. Instead, he saw a man free in Sam Menegola, tried a speculative little chip, and Shea Bolton, magnificent work from him to chip in and intercept that chip. He then centred the ball to Kane Lambert, who from only about 30 metres out made absolutely no mistake. And Geelong back to 3 points in front. The inside 50s for the term at this stage, 7-2 Richmond's way. So clearly the trend of play going very heavily in their direction. And then you mentioned that man, Dustin Martin. Boy, does he know the right times at which to bob up. And he did it again with his third goal. Ball about 40 metres from goal. He takes the ball under a bit of heat, right foot check side. Of course it bounced through. No wobbles with Dusty, no weird bounces of the football. They all go through. This one did as well. And Richmond, for the first time in ages, were back in front. 6.5 minutes left to play. Cam Guthrie missed a chance for the Cats. Tom Hawkins missed another chance for the Cats. And so they went to three-quarter time. Richmond, 2 points to the good. Who was going to win? What did you think at this stage, Farnie?
Well, you know, Richmond have hit the lead, thanks to Dustin Martin. Let's go through a couple of those incidents. The mark by Bolton was brilliant. He was behind Menegola. Menegola, one of the biggest-bodied midfielders in the competition. Bolton, a slip of a lad by comparison. How he was able to get to the front of Menegola and take that mark with the boundary line looming was pure skill. The kick by Lambert, yeah, 30 metres out, the old sort of 45-degree angle. How many times under pressure do we see players muff that kick? To me, that's because of the fact that you don't kick right through the ball from there. That's one of the harder kicks in footy. Straight through the high diddle-diddle, and it came after Shane Edwards had missed a gilt-edged chance for Richmond running into an open goal. So, very handy goal, important goal. That miss by Hawkins. You know what? Here's a guy that had kicked a beautiful goal in the second quarter, had kicked a goal from a very similar position to put the sword through Brisbane the previous week. And we'd seen through the finals when Tom Hawkins rapidly, almost in a panic, plays on from a mark and snaps the ball, the result has not been good. I don't know why he did that. It showed, I think, a sense of urgency and nervousness that I think, quite frankly, Richmond supporters and more importantly, their players would have seized upon. So from the other side of the fence, there would have been the added pressure of the hoots and hollers from the fans every time Hawkins went near the ball. Now, you've got the yips back, mate, or you're nervous. And Richmond players seized upon this for the rest of the game. No, not a good look. 2 points, I thought at three-quarter time, might have been a lot more than just that scoreboard margin.
Well, what would happen? How would the 2020 Premiership be decided? Let's find out. So 2 points of difference in the grand final. Clearly, the early momentum is probably going to tell the tale of who wins the game. Who seized it? Of course, it was the Tigers. They got straight on the board. First goal of the quarter coming up in under a minute. That came to Dion Prestia after a move sweeping around the boundary line, a handball out from Kane Lambert, and Prestia saw an opening and drilled it home. A little dribbler straight through the middle, and in 55 seconds, Richmond's lead was up to 8 points. Significantly, though, at that stage, they had kicked 6 of the last 7 goals. It was looking ominous even that early in the last quarter, wasn't it, Finney?
It certainly was. And, yeah, Dion Prestia, who's not a noted goal kicker, had 2 on the board at this stage. Something else happened early in that last quarter. Now, maybe not immediately to Richmond's benefit on the scoreboard, but the previously almost invisible Tom Lynch got his hands on the ball a couple of times. Took a mark. His centering kick was shallow on the first occasion. And all of a sudden, a new problem for the Cats. A, they're not getting their hands on the ball. B, the Giant has awoken one of the pre-game big dangers to Geelong. Tom Lynch is starting to, as I say, awaken from his slumber.
Spot on. And I mentioned those marks inside 50. Well, they got another critical one. 8 minutes into the final quarter, a long ball from Shea Bolton, playing a great game. And Lynch managed to slip out the back and marked comfortably in the goal square. He converted. Richmond now 15 points to the good with 10 minutes, 20 seconds left on the clock. Cats in all sorts of trouble now. A point to skipper Trent Cotchin. And then the hammer blow, the nail in the coffin effectively for this game. Who was the man who would deliver that killer blow? Do you really need to ask? Of course, it was Dustin Martin. Takes the ball in the half forward line, weaves into a bit of open space, and then bounces it through from outside 50 metres. No problem at all. Richmond, 22 points up, 7 minutes and 46 seconds left on the clock. The premiership at that stage, Finney, almost theirs.
Like the great Klaus DiBiase of Italy and Greg Louganis of the United States, there's nothing that this man, Dustin Martin, doesn't do without the highest degree of difficulty. Of course, the two previous people I were referring to are gold medal winning divers from the Olympic Games. He doesn't dive. He kicks goals of the most difficult type, snaps, dodges, weaves. But all the time, it's the big sticks that beckon and he's able to pierce them. What a superstar. That kick by Shea Bolton, that was equally brilliant. Some evasive work, a half step wrong footing his opponents, and a beautiful long kick to Tom Lynch, now awake and now on the scoreboard. But here's the real problem, Rowan. And, you know, if those wristbands worn by the people at the ground had red, had a facility to flash red, they'd be flashing red on behalf of Geelong, because all of a sudden this team, one of the oldest to ever take the field, is starting to look their age. Gary Ablett's playing with one arm. Should he be on the field? Probably not. Paddy Dangerfield is not able to get into the middle and impress himself on the game. Harry Taylor is almost in a bit of a daze. He seemed to be on the bench perplexed. And when he came on the field, easily exploited. And yeah, to quote a line from The Simpsons, Homer once went for a loan to buy a recreational van, and when they put his credit in, sirens started sounding and red lights flashing. And Homer said, "Is that a good siren? Is that good? And the guy said, "Have you ever heard a good siren, Homer?" Well, sirens were sounding and lights flashing, and there ain't no good ones, and this was bad news for the Cats.
No, indeed. And Richmond, a sign of Richmond's greatness and their maturity, the way they have become a far more mature side, even over the course of this 4 years, I thought was played out in the conclusion of this game. There was another incident which could, in another age, have twisted fate again. And it was an unfortunate incident, a fantastic, courageous mark taken by Menegola, in which he accidentally KO'd teammate Sam Simpson, who was out cold And that caused another delay of at least 5 minutes as he was carted off on the stretcher. Menegola, to his credit, managed to dob the opportunity from outside 50, brought the deficit back to 16 points with just over 7 minutes left to play. Ostensibly, you look at that and you think, well, they have to still be a chance. Did it play out like that? No, sirree, because Richmond now has the maturity just to steady in moments of apparent crisis. I was thinking of some of those games they lost by a kick, even in 2017, the one against the Giants, for example, with that last play of the game, Jeremy Cameron kicking the goal. Things like that don't happen to this Richmond team now, because after that Menegola goal, it was all Tigers. Riewoldt kicked a point. That made it 17 points of difference. Riewoldt, again, from the boundary line, beautiful shot at goal to officially seal the deal. 24 points up now for Tigers. And then, of course, the goal of the evening, the man to make the final definitive statement, who other than Dustin Martin, around the boundary line, in between two Geelong opponents, shrugs somewhat symbolically Patrick Dangerfield, leaving him sprawling on the ground, and snaps beautifully, quickly over his left shoulder, splits the centre. The Tigers, 5 goals up, added another point just before the siren. And the 2020 Premiership team, Richmond, in the end, by a very comfortable 31 points, 12 goals, 9, 81, defeating the Cats, 7-8, 50, 4 goals to Martin, 2 to Prestia, 2 to Riewoldt, singles to McIntosh, Castagna, Lambert and Lynch. For the Cats, their only multiple goal kicker, Menegola, singles to Guthrie, Duncan, Danger, Hawkins and Myers. Finey, what do you think of those last 7 minutes?
Rowan, I want to go back to that moment when Menegola took that courageous mark. Simpson is laid out on the ground, and modern procedure means that we have a little bit of time for both teams to catch their breath and prepare for the final 7 minutes. Geelong gather and Selwood does the talking. But then, and I said it at the time, something really interesting to me. Close-ups of Selwood and Ablett as players were going back to their position. And even though he'd spoken to the team, the close-up on Selwood really showed the face of a battle-wearied warrior. He was deep in thought, not really energised and seemingly relishing the prospect of these last 7 minutes. Ablett too was obviously in pain and not necessarily all that activated for what was about to come. So maybe the words came easily to these old champs, but it seemed to me as though the bodies were failing them. Richmond, on the other hand, as you said, just after that great Menegola goal, powerhouse kick, put the absolute sort of final seal on the game. Maybe one slight error in that. Geelong did go forward and there was a great intercept mark taken by Trent Coxon, who got to the front of Ablett. And of course, Ablett with that bad shoulder couldn't spoil him. And then a very haphazard kick by Coxon fell short of the intended target, only a 10-metre kick, opened the door to the Cats, but it was quickly closed by Richmond. They go down the other end, and you said symbolically that Martin shrugged Dangerfield for that final goal, and what a ripper it was, close to goal of the year. But before that, another symbolic moment, when Riewoldt took a mark in a very similar position to Hawkins, who just before three-quarter time rushed his kick and didn't seize upon the opportunity to get the lead back for the Cats. No, Riewoldt went back calmly from that same position and slotted a beautiful goal. Of course, the game was over by then, but on all counts, Richmond had answered, countered and bettered their opponents.
Well summed up. Richmond decisive victors by 31 points. In the end, their 13th league premiership, that puts them level with the Hawthorn Football Club, behind now only Collingwood on 15 premierships and Carlton and Essendon, both with 16. Very quickly, Finey, just before we move on, that is our game review. What of the futures of these two clubs?
Well, let's start off with the beaten, Geelong. And, pardon me, look, they can certainly point to the fact that one of the real prizes of Trade Week has nominated their club as his next destination, or his destination, his next club. Jeremy Cameron will add immeasurably to the firepower of Geelong and gives them a wonderful opportunity to give Hawkins, who had arguably his best ever season in front of goals this late in his career, a final two or three seasons with great support. The midfield, look, there is a question about the age of that team. The midfield needs bolstering, and Sean Higgins at 32 might be a quick fix. Is it the right fix? I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, look, I know everyone will say the obvious answer to this is they're too old, they've missed their chance, but we've said that routinely about Geelong for a decade now, and they've become the new version of Hawthorn, really. I'm just having a look at their list age and experience in this year's rankings. They are actually not the oldest list in the competition. Now, their best 22 is, but this is significant, I think. In 2020, Collingwood and West Coast, both overall, had older lists than the Cats. So there is talent that we haven't seen a lot of still to come through. In terms of games experience, yes, they are the most seasoned group of players in the AFL. Does Higgins, well, look, they're not stupid. They're well aware of their age. Does Higgins have enough left in the tank to take him that one step further? I don't think it's necessarily a bad move. I think it'll be pretty heavily criticised. One thing you can't criticise is picking up Jeremy Cameron. That could be all the difference. His dynamic with Hawkins will be very interesting to watch. What about the Tigers, Finney? How long does this great era continue?
Oh, they've got plenty of petrol in the tank. The old terrific Tigers, terrific, tenacious, Tetley Tigers. There's some Tiger in the tank still to come, because Dustin Martin is at the peak of his powers, 29 years of age now, but we haven't seen him come to the top of the hill yet, certainly not down the other side. Trent Cotchin is a touch older, but still output fantastic. The forward line, Lynch Young, Riewoldt, of course, is coming towards the end of his career, but he plays a complementary role now. Now, interestingly, in their last two seasons, Richmond have had to counter the fact that during the season, a number of key players were injured. Has this now become almost the blueprint for success for Richmond? The fact that they do have players during the home and away season that miss games gives the opportunity to further the careers of others. Liam Baker, a good example, became more prominent this year when Bashar Hawley was unavailable and Shane Edwards. His absence opened the door for Shai Bolton to become more than a forward and become one of the really star clearance players out of the centre bounce. So I know they can't force players off the field during the season. They've got depth. We haven't seen the best of some of the young players that we saw this year, Egger Lessie-Smith. We haven't seen Collier Dawkins at all. No, Richmond's not going anywhere, Rowan, and that's ominous for the rest of the competition.
Yeah, it certainly is. And when you're talking about depth, their evenness across their squad is a sight to behold, really. You mentioned Egger Lessie-Smith, who played some wonderful footy there when he came into the side. But think about some of the guys that weren't in that 22. Higgins, Chole, Ross, Caddy, Arts. You know, they've got them everywhere. In terms of age, they're very well placed. They actually this year only had the 10th oldest group of players in the competition. In terms of experience, 7th most experienced. So demographically, they're in a real sweet spot. I think this is an era that shows no signs of abating, to be honest. And that is a real worry for the rest of the competition, and fantastic news for that considerable Tiger army. That is our review of the 2020 Grand Final. Only one thing left to do in this podcast, Finney, and that's rant.
On Footyology, the Rant Off.
Well, it's been a long football year. There's been plenty to get off our chests. Sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're upset, sometimes you're befuddled. I don't know what you'd call this mood I'm currently in, Finey. Could be despair. It's a bit of everything, really, but I've got a rant ready for the occasion, and I'd like you to count me in, please.
I'm looking forward to it. A despairing Roman Connolly goes in 3, 2, 1.
I'm pissed off with life, Finey. It's come full circle for me, which in a nutshell means it's going to finish the way it started. Like crap. I'm not even just talking about football here either. When I was a little kid, I was trapped inside my house, unable to enjoy the pleasures of life outside the bubble, fearful of the dangers that lay outside. Does that sound familiar? Yep, we're still locked down here in Melbourne town. And as I digested that news this morning, no respite in sight, there was also the realisation that so many things I feared would happen to the game I've spent my whole life loving have now come to pass. You know what I'm talking about. A grand final not being at the MCG. Me not being there. A grand final played at night. And pre-game entertainment that packed all the punch of a wet lettuce leaf. As usual, I've been replaying all the big moments from Richmond's flag triumph in my head. But the one I can't get rid of is that performance by Shepherd. My God, is that really what contemporary music has come to? Some sanitised production line pop band whose members look like the spawn of the Stepford Wives? Where's the passion? Where's the fire? It was as though the Hillsong Church people were running the show. I'm tipping Scott Morrison was bopping away in between stage-managed photo ops of him building his kids a chicken coop, absolutely loving every bloody second. And what do I mean by full circle? Well, I grew up with the dominant Richmond. They were tough. They had superstars, and they let everyone know about it. Me, I grew up following Essendon, an insignificant little club which was still stuck dreaming about its glory days. Sound familiar? Back then, it was Hart, Bartlett, Sheedy and Burke. Now it's Martin, Cochin, Riewoldt and Lynch, and Martin, and Martin, and Martin. How good is that guy, Finey? And what about the coach who just 4 years ago was fighting for his job? Damien Hardwick has 3 flags under his belt now. They could have been my clubs were it not for that bloody computer which packed up when he was giving his presentation for the Essendon coaching job back in 2007. Talk about sliding doors. You know that his laptop only packed up because he wasn't familiar with it. That was because he couldn't use his own because he was an assistant coach at Hawthorn then and they wouldn't let him have it. If you think I'm making this up, by the way, that is absolutely true. So stuff you, Hawthorn. You finally got us back for the 84-85 grand finals. Well done. You can't miss the symmetry with this Richmond-Essendon connection, Finey. The Bombers pinch your favourite Tiger and Kevin Sheedy and become a power club, while his old club crumbles into a pit of underperformance, infighting and near ruin without a premiership for 37 years. So what does Richmond do? They go and grab a Bomber favourite in Hardwick and become a power club. Essendon, meanwhile, well, et cetera, et cetera. And our flag drought has already lasted 20 years. That's the upside, Bomber fans. We've only got 17 years of this absolute despair to go. Look out, 2037. It's going to be a hot time on the old town for Bomber fans. I mean, I'll be 72 by then. But if I'm still here, I'm telling you, lock up your aged care nursing homes. My Zimmer frame will be hotted up and ready for some hot booty and serious action. Speaking of 70s, that's where life has taken me back to, Finey, the 70s. Richmond are top dogs, and good luck to them. They deserve it. My club? Well, they're crap. And this time around, I won't be able to buy a huge bag of hot chips of 5 cents or come home from school and watch Get Smart, McHale's Navy, or I Dream of Jeannie. It's not all bad, though. After all, the early 70s did feature at least Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, and Led Zeppelin. At least as I relive my youth all over again, I can listen to some decent music from the period and not some de facto church choir who sound like they're doing a Sunday school concert and have all had their nuts cut off beforehand.
Oh, one of your best, Rowan. One of your very best. I didn't know you were a bubble boy as a child.
Well, you know, you're living in that protective bubble. Your parents don't want to let you go anywhere because they're worried you'll get hurt. It's a bit like... Father Dan now. Father Dan won't let us go anywhere because he's worried we'll get hurt.
Yeah,
that bloody Shepherd. Oh, seriously. Music stuffed. All right. Well, that's enough of my whinging. I'm ready to hear your version now. 3, 3, 2, 1, rant.
Well, I'm going to whinge as well, Rowan. Here we go. A little bit of a history and political lesson for those who might not be aware what emergency powers are gifted to ruling parties, governments, during times of war and during times of a threat to national security. Basically, it's a broadening of powers. It allows the ruling party to invoke on its people sometimes draconian measures and to do so without the checks and balances of an opposition. In other words, bring in whatever bloody rules or laws they want. It's happening and can happen at national level or even at state level. I can hear some nodding in the far distance. Well, it's also happened in the AFL. Have a look what Gil McLachlan and his countless cronies have been able to impose upon us in one unusual year, 2020, the year of COVID. Shortened quarters, a 17-game season, compressed games, sometimes 3 in 13 days, football all week round, every single day of the week, and now, most recently, a night grand final played in a foreign state far away from the home of AFL Grand Finals, the MCG. Well, my question and my worry is, will the AFL behave as governments around the world have done in the past, and when we return to normal, fail to return us to our normal in the world of football? Already, Gil McLachlan has promised quarters, maybe not 16 minutes long, but certainly not 20 minutes in time on. What's he dreamt up? 17 and three quarter minutes, 4 minutes with time on every time a player kicks the ball. Who knows what goes on in the mind of McLachlan? I fear we're stuck with a night grand final. It'll only get later, not earlier. Get ready for bounce down at midnight. And as for a shortened season, what else is Gil shortening? The length of our super dogs? They've already gone from 1.5 feet to 5 inches. Any shorter and we'll be snorting them, not eating them. No, don't give powers to people like Gil McLachlan, even if it is an unusual season. Because by the time it's returned to the people, you won't recognise the game as it was. Let's be honest, Gil McLachlan's sport is polo. My greatest fear, my Saints running onto the ground at the MCG in a grand final atop beautiful little ponies.
Very good finding. Slightly disappointed you didn't invoke use of the well-worn polo phrase chucker. I thought we'll start having chuckers instead of quarters.
Yeah, that's right. To misquote Terry Wallace, I'll chucker up.
The threat of a totalitarian football regime, very scary in these authoritarian days. Very eloquent rant, Finey. Well done. We've come to the end of this podcast and the end of this AFL season, but our association with our wonderful sponsors will never end, Finey. A quick shout out to them, please.
Burgers, burgers, burgers. Only at one place. Andrew's Hamburgers, 144 Bridport Street, Albert Park. And as I was reminded by a friend recently, I love Andrew's Hamburgers, but I get the steak sandwich. So there's more besides. And more besides is what you get with a West Point property built by Nick Spartels, more than you could have ever imagined in design and in hands-on attention.
Thanks again, guys, for your wonderful support. And thank you very much once again to our magnificent audience. Boy, it's been an eventful season, but it's been a fun season. I think we're all grateful we had any season. So well done to all concerned. Well done for you guys for listening to us. And a big thank you, as I said. You can help support us at the Acast support page right where you're listening to this or at our Patreon page. It all helps, trust me, sustain our little operation, which is going to continue on over summer, as will this podcast. We are going to have a very brief break of a week or so, but we'll be back on deck very soon and talk not just football, because that never stops, but all manner of life observations, life hacks, vinyl and video, all that stuff. It's all going to return. So stick with us. But we really value your support and very seriously, thanks very much. It is greatly appreciated. Any final words from you, Finey, before we depart?
Absolutely. Look, this season, albeit a different one, saw further contraction in the football media. If you don't want to hear the same voices coming out of the same faces you see on TV, writing columns in newspapers, if you don't want football to be covered by an elite few in a stable of one or two owners, in other words, if you want your football discussed, dissected, and presented to you by a range of different voices and peoples and opinions, not beholden to the AFL and not beholden to a big boss cracking a whip, then please support Footyology, because we are, I think, representative of a dying breed. But we're not going to go quietly, and that is independent thought and opinion on the game we love.
Well spoken, Mark. Well spoken. Thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the grand final. Congrats again to Richmond. Commiserations to the Cats. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again very soon.